There was a podcast called The Sequel Cast that talked about movies. And they also talked about something else called boobies. It's The Sequel Cast. Oh yeah, The Sequel Cast. It's The Sequel Cast. www.sequelcast.com.
Hi, this is Uncle Milkshake from The Sequel Cast. And this episode of Sequel Cast is a special one because Thrasher, Jersey Jason, and myself look at one-shot non-sequels is what I call them. What I mean is it's something like the Mario Brothers movie where it ends as if there's going to be a sequel, but then a sequel was never really made. Although it was recorded in December 2010, one of the movies I talk about in here, Silent Hill, based on the video game, actually is getting a sequel in 3D, no less. Starring Malcolm McDowell, Carrie Ann Moss, and Sean Bean, again, called, I think, Silent Hill Revelation 3D or something like that. So, but otherwise, this sequel cast should be pretty much accurate, notwithstanding it was recorded 6 months ago. And next week on the sequel cast, there's going to be a few changes in the show, and you're going to find that out when you tune in next week. Some exciting changes are afoot. And now back to your scheduled episode of the sequel cast.
Hello and welcome to The Sequel Cast. I am your host, Uncle Milkshake. The Sequel Cast is a podcast devoted to reviewing movies in a franchise, one flick at a time. This episode is a little bit different. We're going to be talking about movies that have an open ending that promise a sequel, but no sequels were actually made. You can check out our past episodes at sequelcast.com. You can download us off of air or through iTunes, or send us an email at sequelcast@gmail.com. With me is Thrasher.
Howdy, everyone on the internet.
And later in the show, Jersey Jason should pop on. So this is an episode a little bit out of the norm, but still fits within the sequel theme. And there's so many movies that promise a sequel just because so many sequels are made in general, I think.
Yeah, I think, and really these sort of like sequel promising endings kind of range from the, I guess they're kind of born out of some, you know, born out of confidence because the makers of the film are just absolutely certain that they're going to get a sequel, that they're going to get to round out their trilogy, or that they're going to launch an important franchise, all the way to the desperate and cloying. They're like, well, we might as well give it a shot. We've tried everything else in this film.
I guess one that I'll start off with, it's not a movie I've seen recently, but I remember it being a big deal at the time, is there is an American Godzilla movie that starred Matthew Broderick, and it had Hank Azaria was in it. I don't recall any of the other actors. It shows you how well I know that film. But anyway,
like Matthew Broderick, the guy from those French assassin movies.
Oh, John Renault, right.
Yeah, John Renault.
You're right.
And actually, Dan Castellaneta, I believe, played Mayor Ebert's aide. And when you have a movie where main characters are named after film critics, you know something's gone wrong.
Well, not only that, I mean, the Godzilla at that time, let me look up to find the year. I think it was like 98 or something like that, maybe earlier than that. But it was made to cash in. Yeah, 1998 is when the American one came out. It was made to cash in on Jurassic Park. It was done by director Roland Emmerich and producer Dean Devlin. Those are the same people behind Independence Day, which was a huge hit. And this was going to be an American take on Godzilla. So you look at that, you think, well, that could be pretty exciting. But it's a very tepid movie, having Matthew Broderick in the lead of a kind of action creature feature. Is bizarre, to say the least. Like, I'm interested that they tried to put real money behind a Godzilla film, but it has a scene late in the movie where there's a bunch of Godzilla eggs, and it's revealed, uh-oh, this Godzilla, it's a female, it's not a male, and that was the promise of a sequel that never came out, but there was an animated cartoon series for TV.
Yeah, as I recall, like the end of the film, like it shows a bunch of eggs and it zooms in on one which starts to crack, and yeah, and I you know, Godzilla is such a long-lasting franchise. I am absolutely certain that the makers of this film, the studio, thought that they were going to be launching their own version of the Godzilla franchise. And as I recall, now I can't remember my. This may have been in an old Starlog magazine. As I recall, the studio had actually secured the rights to two other traditional Godzilla monsters. I believe it might have been Rodan and King Ghidorah. Obviously, with the hope that they would use them in a later movie, which of course never happened. It's I guess I have a lot of mixed feelings about that movie because it's a perfectly good Monster Smashes City movie that is ruined by the addition of a love story, a conspiracy story, and raptors chasing people.
You know, all the story. Movies by Roland Emmerich, like Independence Day or The Day After Tomorrow, or they're chock-a-block full of characters. They got a zillion characters in them, and they try to give each of them an individual story. And while that's fine for something like, I don't know, like Godfather, sometimes in an action movie, it makes sense to concentrate on just a few characters and get to know them really well or get to care about them somehow. And I just think Godzilla
is
something...
You know what it is?
Yes?
You know what it is? That Roland Emmerich, he doesn't really make adventure movies. He makes disaster movies.
Yep.
And one of the traditions of disaster movies is to just cram in as many characters as possible. You know, if you watch a Japanese Godzilla film, there might be really only four principal human characters. And then you got Godzilla.
Well, I'm not saying the Japanese Godzilla movies...
But yeah, the American Godzilla films.
Yeah, I'm not saying the Japanese Godzilla movies are good films either, necessarily, but, like...
I will. They're honest films.
I would recommend, if you want to see a more modern Godzilla film, track down Godzilla Final Wars, which is an insane... It's the most recent Godzilla movie made, and it's Godzilla versus, like, all the monsters from all the movies. And
including the American Godzilla.
Yes, including who's called just Zilla, who dies, like, in 5 seconds from the real Japanese Godzilla. That's a pretty fun picture, and I'm sure later on in the sequel cast we might cover some Godzilla movies, because there's quite a lot of those. But we need to keep things moving, so I threw out a title into the ring of sequels of a movie that set up for a sequel that never delivered. Do you have one in mind, Thrasher?
Actually, we might as well talk about the one which actually inspired this episode. When I came up with the idea of, we could do an episode for a sequels that never happened, everyone I mentioned this to, their very first response is, like Super Mario Brothers. And so, yeah, like Super Mario Brothers, a crazy, but in its own sly way, brilliant movie based on the historic series of video games. You know, it ends, you know, with Mario and Luigi back in New York. Everything's back to normal. They're all, you know, back to their normal lives. And then, like, Princess Peach kicks down the door. She's got guns and ammo, a bandolier of bullet bills, a phrase you will never hear anywhere else. You know, across her chest, like, Mario, Luigi, there's trouble! And then just like, we need you! And then it just cuts to credits.
Yeah, I saw that Super Mario Brothers movie in the theater. I was in fifth grade, I think, at the time. Yeah, that had to have been it. And it's weird. It's like, that Super Mario Brothers movie, it's like if you made a ripoff of, if you took the set design from Blade Runner and made it for kids. It was like Blade Runner meets Jurassic Park, and it stars Dennis Hopper as Bowser. I mean, the video games have very fanciful tone and had a few different animated TV series. I think a cartoon might have made more sense, or something with the imaginative setting of the game. But instead, it had a dark and dreary sci-fi setting. So Mario and Luigi, they're supposed to be Italian, yet in the film, Mario is played by Bob Hoskins, a British actor, and Luigi is played by John Leguizamo, a Puerto Rican actor. So it's not like you have to have Italian actors play Italian parts in movies, but some of the other people that were considered when they were making this movie for the role of Mario were Tom Hanks, who wanted too much money at the time. I have to say Bob Hoskins at least you know, looks the part of Mario. He's kind of more husky.
Well, you know, I really like the Super Mario Brothers movie. I didn't when I was a kid, but as an adult, I really am fond of it because it's one of the few video game movies which I will dare to say in its own way is good. Not in the sense that it's a great film, but just in the sense that the filmmakers took one look at the source material, then took another look at the source material, then took a thorough look at the source material and said, well, fuck it, and made their own crazy movie out of 10 levels.
Yeah, I mean, it's so far removed, and another actor they were considering for the part of Mario was Dustin Hoffman, who was really close to doing it because his kids loved the video game, but that never happened. But a Dustin Hoffman is Mario.
It's also got one of Dennis Hopper's truly great crazy man performances.
Yeah, definitely crazy. I mean, the whole reason Dustin Hoffman did the movie...
And, you mean Dennis Hopper?
I'm sorry. Dennis Hopper did the movie. And the story goes from a book I read about the history of video games that mentions this movie called Game Over. It's by David Sheff. He takes his son to the premiere of the movie, and afterwards there's an awkward silence, and one of Dennis Hopper's son turns to Dennis Hopper and says, Dad, why did you make this money? And he thought, well, you know, the money was okay. I thought you needed money for things like shoes. And his son says, Dad, I don't need shoes that badly. So, but I mean, yeah, you know, the tone of the Super Mario Brothers movie is so unique. I kind of wish they would have done a sequel, even if it was direct-to-video, just to see where they would have gone with it.
Yeah, I'm sure the studio was banking on there being a Super Mario Brothers 2, whatever crazy form it was going to take.
And I mean, I think the budget at the time was like $50 million, which is a lot more then than it is now. And it didn't make that back domestically, theatrically. Since then, it's become a cult film. But it is funny how a lot of movies that become cult movies have this kind of phenomenon where they're just the first in a series, but they promise a sequel.
Yeah. You know, actually, speaking of cult movies, one that, you know, rests nestled deeply in the heart of every science fiction film fan from the 80s, Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension, an amazing film which, as the opening credits start to roll, you know, promises Buckaroo Banzai will be back in Buckaroo Banzai versus the World Crime League.
Now, it does that in the opening credits?
No, the closing credits.
Oh, closing, I see.
I don't know why you did that, although I would love to see like a film satire that opens with the promise of a sequel.
Yeah, that's very, very ballsy, all right. I think, you know, I've never seen Buckaroo Banzai. I've only caught clips of it on Comedy Central flipping through the channels.
Really?
Yeah, I've always meant to see it, and I just have to be in the right mood to sit down. You know, lately I've been so busy, it's hard for me to sit down and watch a whole movie from beginning to end. I might watch half of it and pick up the later half later, and that seems like such a crazy movie. I just want to set apart the time to watch it in one sitting.
Yeah, you really should. I'll admit it does kind of drag a bit at the end, but Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension is one of those movies you should all see in one go. It's an amazingly crazy movie. The main character, Buckaroo Banzai, he's the son of American and Japanese super genius parents. He's an astronaut, a rock star, a brain surgeon, a physicist, and a superhero.
And he's played by Peter Weller, right?
Yeah, who many people remember as RoboCop, or that one villain from the last season of Star Trek Enterprise.
Well, Peter Weller was RoboCop in RoboCop 1 and 2. A different actor played him for Part 3.
Yeah, but we don't care about that guy. That's a sequel that we may do everything we can to avoid covering that sequel.
Oh, but I love the I think we should do RoboCop at some point, because those movies are a lot of fun, and they certainly have a lot of spinoffs. But
true.
Three, yeah, RoboCop versus ninjas, not the best combination. In a sewer, nonetheless.
Yeah. But with Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension, it's... And it's funny, I keep saying Across the Eighth Dimension because I want to be specific, but there is no other Buckaroo Banzai movie. We never got Buckaroo Banzai versus the World Crime League, which, explaining Buckaroo Banzai, if you haven't seen the movie, it does sound pretty confusing, because it's about an astronaut, rock star, brain surgeon, physicist, superhero, who, while experimenting with matter phasing, discovers an intergalactic war criminal is played by John Lithgow, is trapped on Earth, and he and his alien cronies are building this like spaceship, and another spaceship of good aliens is going to blow up the Earth to keep John Lithgow from getting off the Earth, and you know it's all. Oh, and Buckaroo Banzai has a fan club, and the president's like strapped to a surgery table the whole movie. It's this crazy movie, and I did a lot of thinking about it, and I now realize why Buckaroo Banzai seems so crazy. The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai it's what pulp hero stories would have been had they been created in the 1980s and not the 1930s. Buckaroo Banzai is, in the tradition of Lamont Cranston and Doc Savage, a pulp adventure hero. It just so happened that he didn't show up until the pulp party had long ended. You know, he's larger than life and twice as handsome. And that's the other thing. Like, and you probably wonder, how the hell could a movie this crazy get made? The creators of the movie, they actually sold it to the studio as a franchise. They were saying, Indiana Jones and the Temple and had come out, and sequels already being made for that, and that was turning into a big powerhouse franchise. A lot of studios wanted blockbuster franchises along that same line. And so when the director and the screenwriter were pitching Buckaroo Banzai, like, well, this will be your franchise. This is that action-adventure hero, over-the-top action-adventure hero for the modern age. And they had planned a whole series of films, Buckaroo Banzai versus the World Crime League to be the first. I mean, they had a lot of confidence in it. But sadly, the studios didn't know what to make of the film. And during the theatrical release, audiences didn't really know what to make of the film. Buckaroo Banzai's real success came with video and DVD.
I mean, and certainly just the title, Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension, doesn't roll off the tongue. It's not... Titles of movies, I think, are more important than some people give them credit for. Not that movies with ridiculous titles haven't been successful, but, you know, it's cool that it got made and that it has a cult following. We were mentioning Mario Brothers earlier, and that reminded me, something I really liked as a kid was He-Man. And there was a live-action movie based on He-Man, not called He-Man, but called Masters of the Universe.
Oh, yes, by the Golden Globus, Canon Films, studio which will live in infamy.
Yeah, Canon Films made tons and tons of things in the 80s, action movies.
Including the final Superman sequel with George Reeves.
Christ, yeah.
Superman Christ, Superman the Quest for Peace.
Speaking of which, have you heard they're doing a new Superman movie?
I've heard, yes.
So I said it's going to be directed by the guy who did the 300 and Watchmen.
Seems like I now have absolutely no confidence in that film.
Did you not like Watchmen?
I don't like that director. Yeah. Not personally, I do not like any of his output.
Speaking of output, let me add Jersey Jason on the line. Looks like he just hopped on.
Marvelous.
That's an awful segue, and we can bring him on to talk about He-Man.
I'm actually, Uncle Milkshake, I'm surprised you beat me to He-Man. I thought I was the only one who saw that movie sequel set up.
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, can you hear me?
Who wanted to see the first one?
Who wants a banana?
So, Jason, just to catch you up to speed, right now we're talking about Masters of the Universe.
Oh, I kind of got that from what I heard Will's comment. I'm going to go by Mr. Pink, because I'd like to talk a little bit about Tarantino.
Okay, we'll get to you after talking about He-Man. But, what to follow with?
If anything, you know what? I want to see Thundercats, the movie, and I want to see a sequel to that. I was okay with the movie itself, but I don't want to see another He-Man movie. It almost felt like they were trying to do a Howard the Duck, where they were trying to bring in a property and put it into the real world.
You're absolutely right, and I think they did that probably because of a low budget, because the beginning of Masters of the Universe is kind of faithful to the cartoon with the fantasy setting, has a nice cheesy feel.
Like Flash Gordon.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's not a bad comparison. And Dolph Lundgren as He-Man, I think, is fine casting. Frank Langella as Skeletor, good. You know, that's not so bad.
No, it had surprisingly good cast, including Billy Barty as what was he, the wizard, the tinker, the little guy?
I think it was the tinker.
Gwildor.
Gwildor, because they couldn't do Orko.
And it has Courtney Cox of Friends fame as the romantic interest.
God, yeah.
And actually, isn't the guy the same guy who played Tom Paris in Star Trek Voyager?
I wouldn't know that. I haven't seen enough Star Trek.
What? No.
Here, I'm gonna look it up now.
Look it up on Wikipedia. But yeah, Masters of the Universe, even as a kid, I thought this was a weird movie. Because it's set in modern day, there's scenes where they're eating chicken from a KFC, talking about how delicious fried chicken is, when it should really be like a kids-friendly action film, like, I don't know, like Conan the Destroyer, Conan the second one.
Yeah.
I think, you know, something like that might have been more fun.
Well, also, if you look at the prince when he's not being He-Man, he's kind of down-to-earth and easygoing. And, of course, once he has to defend the kingdom, he has to become a badass. So it's not like Conan, because Conan's always a badass.
Well, sure, I just was saying...
Oh, here it is.
Yeah, go on.
I've just found the relevant information. The young Earth kid, young Earth boy, Kevin Corrigan in Masters of the Universe, is played by Robert Duncan McNeil, who did play Tom Paris in Star Trek Voyager. Lieutenant Tom Paris.
And who was Lieutenant Tom Paris?
He was the lieutenant of the Voyager.
Oh, was that a regular character in the show? I never watched Voyager.
Oh, yeah, he'd been on the show from the beginning.
Oh, okay.
He was the best pilot they had, correct?
Yeah, he was an ace pilot and navigator. Loved piloting the Delta Flyer. I think he designed part of it. And he sort of is set up to be kind of like the Lothario, but he became a more well-rounded character as the series progressed.
And he was also into kind of a sci-fi from the 1950s Holovids or whatever, of something like Flash Gordon.
Captain Proton.
Wow. One more thing about Masters of the Universe, like the Skeletor's cronies are wearing these black uniforms and these black helmets that remind me very much of something out of Star Wars. You know, it's very weird. And the ending of the movie, He-Man and Skeletor fight face off. He thinks Skeletor's dead, but after the end credits, Skeletor pops out of the goo and says, "I'll be back." But a sequel was never made.
And that is such a ham-fisted thing, because like that, for people to see that, they have to sit through the boring credit sequence of an even more boring movie.
And the DVD of Masters of the Universe has a commentary from the director, Gary Godard, and it's literally like they copy and pasted two comments over and over again, because all he says is, "We use a red filter on the lighting here to create a mood." And this was my first feature film.
Well, the thing with Illusion, where the sorceress or whatever her name was appears as the mother of the one character Courtney Cox is to get the key or to get something. My head.
Masters of the Universe is nonsense. Don't waste your time.
It's a crazy movie about dimension hopping swords and cyberpunk sword science fantasy nonsense. You know how things you see as a kid can haunt you in freakish ways for the rest of your life?
Sure.
Well, one of the few villain characters that from He-Man that actually appeared in Master of the Universe was Evil Lyn, who just appears as this ashen-faced, thorny dominatrix. Even as a child, there's a scene where like she captures Tom Paris. She captures the male human from Earth and like puts this collar on him that makes him tell the truth. And damn it, why does that erotic imagery have to stick with me?
Wow.
Well, between that and She-Ra's boots on the cartoon,
I think that explains a lot about what I happen to know about you.
yep, it does. Cartoons, nothing illegal.
Cartoons back then really did form, I think, a lot of our generation's sexuality.
Because He-Man, for Christ's sake, right? It's a guy with his shirt off with muscles wearing a loincloth.
Right, yeah, but as you can tell from my comments, I'm into the ladies.
I didn't
provided they have mind control colors.
I was just saying.
I don't know what you got out of it.
Mr. Pink brought up sexuality in 80s cartoons.
I guess we better explain. Our special guest today is Mr. Pink.
Well, actually, there was also supposed to be, speaking of cartoons, there was actually supposed to be a sequel to Roger Rabbit. It was going to be like Platoon, but with cartoons.
Oh my gosh.
But the problem is that they felt that the whole point of the movie that they made was that it was the combination of both the humans and the cartoons in that setting with that mystery, with that kind of noir feel to it, and also having both companies, Universal and MGM, or Disney, I should say, lending each other their characters will probably never happen again.
And Warner Brothers as well.
Warner Brothers,
yeah,
sorry.
I mean, Spielberg, who was one of the producers, was a big part with that deal happening where he got, like, Betty Boop, Mickey Mouse, and Donald Duck. No, what am I talking? Mickey Mouse and Daffy Duck. You know,
and,
in the same film.
Bugs Bunny.
Yeah, right. And, you got Warner Brothers, Disney, all that stuff. That was really a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Although, Robert Zemeckis, the director of the first film, has been talking about doing the sequel to Roger Rabbit again. So who knows if it all happened, but it was in development at one time.
Would have been interesting. Wouldn't say it's promised by the first film, but would have been interesting.
Yeah. Now, Mr. Pink, you were talking about a Tarantino sort of sequel that was kind of promised but never happened. What were you thinking of?
Well, it was hypothesized that it should have happened. Uh-huh. Because the whole thing about Tarantino is Tarantino's got a huge head. Now, I don't mean he has a big ego. I mean, he has a huge head.
He has a huge chin, too, yeah.
Like the Elephant Man.
Yeah. But the thing about him, about his ego and about his writing style is a lot of the stuff that he writes is supposed to happen in the same universe. Kill Bill technically takes place in the same universe as Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs. In Reservoir Dogs and in Pulp Fiction, Marcel Wallace is actually a figure who is never seen in Reservoir Dogs, but he is seen in Pulp Fiction. It's also theorized that what Vincent Vega has, the briefcase, is what was stolen in Reservoir Dogs and was supposed to get its way to Marcel. Supposedly Marcel's the one who actually set up that the heist that takes place in Reservoir Dogs.
And they were trying to get a sequel made with the John Travolta character from Pulp Fiction. Is that?
Yeah, it's supposed to be Vincent and also known as Mr. Blonde, who is Vic. It's Vic and Vincent Vega. They both have the same name. Supposedly they were supposed to be brothers or whatever.
Who played Mr. Blonde?
Hmm?
Who played Mr.
Oh,
Blonde?
Oh, Michael Madsen.
Oh, okay.
Michael Madsen, who also plays Bud in Kill Bill.
Yep.
I think he's a great actor, and he's so, oh God, him as Mr. Blonde, he is so good in Reservoir Dogs. I love the quote, you gonna bark all day, little doggy, or are you gonna bite? And that whole movie, like, again, one of Tarantino's best works, Reservoir Dogs, full cast of awesome people, some great action, some great kind of interaction between the criminals themselves. And then Mr. Blonde with the razor blade cutting a guy up while Stephen Wright drones on in the background with Stuck in the Middle with You by Steeler's Wheel.
Oh, that was Tom Petty in the Heartbreakers version.
No, because they were playing the super sounds of the 70s. Steeler's Wheel, had to be Steeler's Wheel. Just cutting a guy up, ah, man. But the problem with that, of course, is Mr. Blonde dies. So does Vincent Vega. Both characters die on screen. The idea was formulated as a prequel, showing the damage both characters could do on screen when they're together. But Tarantino said that's pretty unlikely because Madsen and Travolta are so old.
Well, they were old at the time. Or older,
yeah,
right? In their 40s, right?
They could have still played themselves. If they'd done it the year after, they could have still played themselves. But now they can't play their younger selves.
Well, and also Tarantino, he's an extremely talented filmmaker, but he certainly takes time between movies. He's not someone like Woody Allen who does like a movie or two a year.
Well, yeah, but he also went on to do other projects. I mean,
sure.
He'll do them very sparsely, but he takes so long on a project because he really does in-depth research. I mean, all the work he did making Kill Bill, and just plucking from so many different movies, and just man, I would love to I'd love to watch a film marathon with him. Just to see, because I'd love to see his reaction. I'd love to see him taking notes and what things he pulls and what he comments on. I'd love to see his commentary on a movie that he hasn't made.
You know, I think he might have done a commentary for a... he's on the commentary for From Dusk Till Dawn, which he starred
in. Yeah, but he's in that.
Yeah, but didn't direct. But I think he's also on a commentary on some like Shaw Brothers karate movie or something.
It's funny you bring up Dusk Till Dawn. He said that the closest thing to a Vic and Vincent movie, which is like supposed to be, it was called Double V Vega. You can see in the acting pair of him and George Clooney that the characters in that were supposed to be very close to what Mr. Blonde and Vincent would have been like if they had been in a movie together. Except, of course, those characters don't really make it through the movie. They kind of... I'm not sure. They die in the first hour? I know Tarantino gets it pretty fast.
Tarantino becomes a vampire. And, yeah, and Tarantino wrote From Dusk Till Dawn. It was just directed by Robert Rodriguez, but he also stars in it with Clooney.
But he also has talked about still doing the movie with Madsen and Travolta. But here's the twist, which I don't get. He wants to do it. Madison's up for it. I don't know how Travolta feels. Each brother's twin meeting up on a plane, not knowing their connection as they're both journeying to avenge the deaths of their brothers, but their deaths were like so long ago. And if they're twins of the brothers, wouldn't they be brothers themselves? Or is Vega just a really common name, like far on the tree, like far removed?
Could be an estranged family, although if anyone can make that work, it probably would be Tarantino.
Right, but I still would love to see something like that.
I like Madsen. Madsen, I loved his part in his part of Bud in Kill Bill. Madsen's a really good actor, and I felt bad for Bud, even though he was part of the group that beat the bride. I really...
And in Kill Bill, his performance is really subtle, too. He doesn't always have a lot of dialogue, but just with the look, or... Mm-hmm. He just has such a sense
like
of...
A tiredness.
Yeah, a tiredness. A lonely man.
Oh, God, yeah. Park. And it's still, he still shoots Uma Thurman in the chest with rock salt. I mean...
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, Thrasher, do you have another movie that promises a sequel that never gave one?
Yes, and it's actually a sequel that promises a sequel.
Oh, what?
Way back in the past, there was a fun little science fiction action thriller called Pitch Black, which really was where Vin Diesel made him a name for himself. A ship transporting some colonists and one prisoner crashes on a desert planet. Populated apparently entirely by very carnivorous things that only come out at night. And wouldn't you know it, the planet's complicated orbit and series of moons is going to mean a complete and total nightfall relatively soon, and so they have to survive the night long enough to repair a ship and escape. And Vin Diesel and a girl, Vin Diesel, of course, the criminal Riddick, and a girl escape, and another woman, and a man, the Muslim cleric, escape on this shuttlecraft, and it's all well and good. Well, when Vin Diesel became a megastar shortly after that, some people thought, oh well, we could make this into a franchise. So they gave us The Chronicles of Riddick, which was to be the first part of a Riddick trilogy. And I remember what they said in interviews at the time was, Pitch Black will be to The Chronicles of Riddick what The Hobbit is to Lord of the Rings. They wanted to do something that big and epic. And they certainly set up to do that with the first Chronicles of Riddick movie, which is a a sprawling space opera. I would say on par with Dune. Now, when I say on par with Dune, I'm of course talking about the movie and not the novel. Hmm. It's this whole thing involving these like intergalactic genocidal conquerors, the Necromongers, and other prison planets, and Riddick, and what few surviving characters from the first film they could bring back. And the way the film ends is that Riddick gets into a fight with the leader of the Necromonger faction that's on the planet of New Mecca, and Riddick kills him in a fight, which turns out to have been a duel. And by Necromonger tradition, since he killed the leader, he's now the leader. So it ends with all the Necromongers praising Riddick as their new leader and commander, and he just kind of flops down on a throne and going, "No, no, no!" And it's almost a Conan the Barbarian style ending, but you know, clearly there was another movie, they wanted to do another movie, but sadly, Chronicles of Riddick never really took off, and so the second Chronicle of Riddick, which I suppose would have dealt with the aftermath of him leading the Necromongers, just never got off the ground. And the movie sets up all of this mythology about Riddick and his people. We find out Riddick had a people, which is, of course, was meant to pay off in later movies, but we will never see those movies.
Well, there's been talks, you know, as recently as like a year ago of the director David Twohy and Vin Diesel doing, you know, trying to do a sequel to Riddick again, but on a lower budget scale. So I don't know whether they'd continue that same story or if that will get off the ground or not. Because
that would be the weird thing to kind of like to have it start with a completely different story, just have one line of dialogue that explains that kind of explains the gap between stories. Oh yeah, and I was leader of the Necromongers for a while. Anyway,
yeah, they did also come out with a direct to video animated movie on Riddick, and there's also a video game called Escape from Butcher Bay.
There's two video games, actually. The first was Escape from Butcher Bay, and then they did another one, and then Escape from Butcher Bay was supposed to sort of bridge the gap between Pitch Black and Chronicles of Riddick. Well, when they did a sequel to Escape from Butcher Bay, rather than trying to do a video game that would have been the second Chronicle of Riddick, which I actually feel would be the way they should have gone, instead, they made a video game that bridged the gap between Butcher Bay and the Chronicles of Riddick.
Ah.
So it's like a double prequel, almost.
Weird. Let's see. Mr. Pink, do you have an idea for another sequel? Yeah, or another movie promised a sequel that never delivered?
I actually came up with two in the car, and for the life of me, I can't remember what they are.
Okay, well, I'm going to throw one out there. I know I've thrown out a few so far, but this is a different kind of episode. One movie that promised a sequel.
I'm getting chills.
Yeah.
I think I know what's coming.
Do you know? Making a dramatic pause here, which I'll cut out in editing. Because I forgot the title that I was going to say. would Willow count?
Yeah, Willow would absolutely count.
I suppose so.
Because Willow, even though it doesn't have an ending, it's something kind of like you were talking about with Chronicles of Riddick, where it certainly sets up a world and all these characters and races and things that, you know, George Lucas, that man loves to do franchises. But Willow was something that didn't take off the ground in that respect. Willow's a movie directed by Ron Howard that stars Warwick Davis, who played Wicket the Ewok in Return of the Jedi, and plays a lot of random side characters in the Harry Potter films. And he's also the Leprechaun in those films.
And also starring Val Kilmer.
Yeah, of course. Val Kilmer is Mad Mardigan.
Can't go wrong with my book.
Yeah, he's a wonderful... But, I mean, this movie...
Well, Kevin Pollak.
Kevin Pollak, right, is in it? As a Daikini? No, shit.
Billy Barty.
Billy Barty is in it, too. Yeah. But, I mean, it's a fantasy movie, kind of more for kids, but I think adults can enjoy it, too. And there are parallels with Star Wars, in that you have a bad guy that has a big helmet with a skull on it covering his face, with kind of a cape on it that reminds one of Darth Vader a little bit.
And Mad Mardigan is pretty much a sword and sorcery version of Han Solo.
Han Solo, yeah. That's very well put. But I think this movie is a lot of fun, and even though they didn't make a movie sequel to it, they wrote a three-book trilogy that takes place after Willow. That deals with Willow. I think I only read some of the first one. It deals with Willow older, and the princess that's a baby in the first film is now a teenager and kind of an annoying brat. And for some reason, Willow rides on a dragon. I didn't think the first book in that trilogy was very good, so I didn't go on with it. But
yeah, Willow's is an interesting movie. I only really enjoy it in sort of fits. You know, I really only like it when Kevin Pollak is on the screen. But it's just this kind of weird sort of first act of an epic fantasy about a race of little people who find an abandoned baby who's a princess, and an evil queen's trying to kill the baby, and there's an epic quest. And I don't know. It's like, there's so much that movie throws at you, I just don't feel that much of it sticks.
I do think the music by James Horner is pretty good. It has some nice music in there. That's not well put at all. I think it's fun. You're right, Thrasher, in that it does throw a lot of characters, scenarios, settings at you. I mean, you know, I think of a movie, like Return of the Jedi that has, going back to Star Wars again, but it has a lot of planets, a lot of different aliens, but that was a third in a series. Imagine if that was the first movie in a series with, like, all this plot and all these characters and settings. You have so many weird names thrown at you, and
you've just described Star Wars Episode One.
Yeah.
Oh, that actually is, that's a really good point. They do too much too fast. Because, like, everybody's already read all the comics. Everybody's seen all the movies. We have to, like, now that everybody knows that we have to mention every single person, every single planet, and we have to add all these new characters so we can make the right action figures.
And Willow is famous for, there's a few sequences that exploit this technology of the time called morphing. That was common in a few movies at the time where
it was gorgeous. It was really well done in Willow.
I believe Willow was the first film to use morphing.
It was the first, but afterwards you had films like Star Trek VI did morphing, and God, what else?
A Terminator 2.
Yeah, that was a bit different how I did it, but sure. Oh, no, I guess you're right with the T-1000, the cop going into the metal face. Yeah, so it's an interesting film. I'd recommend Willow. It's one of those, you know, I liked as a kid. I didn't like it when I saw it again in high school, but I saw it like about a year ago and kind of enjoyed it more now. But it's
since you brought up Willow and how, like, I guess there's a book series, think of all the movies that have been made off of book series that have not followed through with the entire series, like The Golden Compass.
Yes, sure.
The series of unfortunate events.
Is supposed to...
That too, yeah. Huh.
Fit so many of the books into the first movie, yeah, they should have had more. They should have had a sequel.
Well, do you want to talk about one of those, Mr. Pink?
Golden Compass, with Daniel Craig and that little girl who I hope she went on to do something, but I haven't seen her in anything that I can think of. And Nicole Kidman. There's a whole lot of dust. Animals that are bonded to humans can talk. And there are polar bears that fucking... Oh, God, that polar bear fight. They know, because he basically punches the other polar bear's jaw off, then grabs him by the throat with his mouth.
And they don't cut away when this happens in this film. It's a pretty violent scene in Golden Compass, I recall that.
I know. It's quite brilliant. And it does like have a lot to do with like free will. It's like a weird spirituality and his demonic whatever that Christians hated or something.
Ugh. Have you read the books? I did see the Golden Compass film, and I thought the plot was very confusing. Again, kind of like Willow, had a lot of characters and concepts thrown at you. I thought towards the end it got more interesting. I mean, it's certainly pretty dark and has sort of an open ending where the characters are sort of heading on a flying airship towards the bad guy's castle or something. Does that sound right?
Yeah, I think.
I mean, it's like they're halfway done with their quest, and they're like, okay, we're going to finish our journey, and the movie ends, and then there's no sequel.
Well, you know what other movie does that along this theme? Ralph Bakshi's Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Which we talked about on an earlier episode of the Sequel Cast. Check it out at sequelcast.com or search for Sequel Cast on iTunes.
I just saw Let Me In, the remake of Let the Right One In.
Is it good?
Yes.
I've seen the original.
It was actually pretty good. I was really amazed. But I'd like to see a sequel to it because I'd like to see what happens to the relationship. Like, you kind of get an idea of what's going to happen, but you can only imagine.
Yeah, I think I recall the ending being a bit abrupt in the, was it Swedish original? Or?
In the original was Swedish.
Okay, yeah.
Not all films that promise sequels are necessarily all that serious. The martial arts comedy Kung Pao Enter the Fists ends with not only the setup for a sequel, but a fake trailer for a sequel called Kung Pao Tongues of Fury, which oddly enough has been like listed as in production for the past 4 or 5 years, but I frankly don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, don't believe everything you read on Internet Movie Database. Now,
people, they want to make sequels, and then they, because either they can't get the original people in them, such as in Double V, or, do you think they could ever get the cast back for Buckaroo Banzai?
I bet they could if they really tried.
And then has it been too long to make, I don't know if any studio would touch Golden Compass again.
I don't think so. I mean, that, you know, most the international gross on it actually wasn't bad, but domestically it didn't do that well, and it, I don't know. I mean, Golden Compass was also, even though I know the book's been around for a while, but that movie was released to try and cash in on Lord of the Rings and Narnia and those sort of things.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That film.
Yeah. Which has its third movie coming out. Hey, you know they should do sequels of, oh, about that movie Star Wars?
Oh, yeah, they never made a sequel to that one. You know, that boy, what's his name, Luke, he drops a missile into a hole and something explodes.
But
I always wondered what happened next.
What is the idea behind sequels? I mean, a lot of it is hitting the anvil when it's hot. Back to the Future sets up its own sequel, and they started filming the second the movie hit the theaters or even before.
No, I don't believe that was the case. I was always under the impression that the to be continued at the end of Back to the Future was actually a joke.
Yeah, it was meant to be a joke, and but they do mention they were kind of screwed with how the way that movie ended, with how they had to do the sequel.
Because the actors?
Well, not just the actors, but you didn't just have Marty McFly and Doc Brown in the car. You also had the girlfriend. And they said, had the girlfriend not been in the car, they wouldn't have had to come up with all these contrivances in Back to the Future 2 with how to hide her unconscious body or...
Yeah,
I mean, we're not talking about Back to the Future, but I mean,
I remember seeing Back to the Future 2, and there already was the preview for the third one.
Yeah, no, 2 and 3 were done back to back. That is.
So the question is, like, how do you revisit your material? How long does it take you to get one out if it stays fresh in people's minds? Or if you've got a character like your Saws. Or your Friday the 13th, where you've got a horror franchise.
Well, part about like those horror franchises is they keep the budget fairly low every time. Even, you know, something more recent, like the Resident Evil movies. They recently came out with Resident Evil,
3D.
Yeah.
Well, it's number 5 or something, isn't it?
No, it's not 5, it's 4. But, you know, all those movies are done for a fairly low budget, and even though they aren't tremendously successful, they do make a profit theatrically and do really well on home video. And that reminds me, so here's one, a movie, a video game movie nonetheless. We talked about Mario Brothers earlier. They did a video game movie it's a movie of a game called Silent Hill.
Oh, yeah.
That I thought was, have either of you seen this?
Yeah.
Only a few clips.
I've seen the movie. It's not...
It's very atmospheric.
I definitely love the atmosphere. I love the ash falling. That was just so cool. I liked the ending, I liked the comeuppance, but I didn't like the acting of the people. The actual townsfolk, just, I don't know.
It was a bit theatrical, a lot of screaming. So Silent Hill is a movie, the movie doesn't even, the plot doesn't make sense in the game, it doesn't really make much sense in the movie, but this girl, there's a mother and she has a daughter that's sick, and there's a cure for her disease somewhere in this town that's abandoned. but the town can sort of shift between different dimensions to where it's filled with these monsters. It's very, a lot of fog and snow in it, really creepy, really disturbing looking monsters. Like, I don't know if you'd really call it a psychological horror movie, but it's just a lot of very weird imagery that comes straight from the video games. And I think as video game movies go, it's without a doubt one of the better ones. But the ending of the movie is the husband of the wife and the kid has been looking for his wife but can't find him because they're trapped in this other dimension. And he goes home, and later on you see the wife and the kid go home. But meanwhile, in the real world, the husband is just kind of in bed sleeping and doesn't notice the wife and the kid are there, so being that they're still trapped in that other dimension. Do I kind of got that right?
Maybe.
Let's wrap this up with one more that maybe all of us have seen.
I guess if we're going to... And this movie, if I may presume to nominate our final film.
Yeah, go on.
Okay. This is a film which really deserves a podcast of its own. Please do not consider anything we're going to say an endorsement of this film, because believe us, we are not going to endorse this film.
Okay, you've got me psyched.
This is a film which covers the full spectrum from incompetent to reprehensible. And yes, it ends with a ham-fisted setup for a sequel. This movie is 1988's Mac and Me.
Even the name Mac and Me sounds like E.T. Even
it's a shitty story about a shitty alien and a shitty kid, and ends with a shitty setup for a sequel.
So he was sucked into a vacuum on Mars or the moon?
Yeah,
or
he sucked into... I tried to watch this movie for this episode, and I couldn't make it through half of it. And I tried to watch it six different occasions.
Was he a dancing teddy bear or something?
No, the design even kind of looks like E.T., but like E.T.'s ugly but cute, kind of. And this
it looks like if E.T.'s girlfriend had to have an abortion, this is what would have come out. That's what Mac
from
Mac.
It has these big eyes, it whistles, but it's kind of tan and lumpy, sort of like E.T., but not dark brown. But yeah, like, there's a... Not a satellite, like a robot or something goes on Mars, scouting.
A probe,
there you go. A probe goes on Mars and has a vacuum attachment to collect soil samples, somehow manages to suck up an alien family.
The whole damn family.
Goes back to Earth, spits the family out. This, at NASA. NASA has really shitty, they never say it's NASA, but well, I'll just call it NASA. I don't care.
I'm not even sure if they say the planet's Mars.
Yeah, anyway.
They say it's America, then it's NASA.
Yeah, so in NASA, so the probe spits out the aliens. NASA has shitty security because the aliens escape. Somehow the one alien, the little alien, who's called Mac because it stands for Mysterious Alien Creature. Jeez.
Yeah.
Jumps in a car of a family that have a kid that has a wheelchair, that's in a wheelchair.
But the kid doesn't have a wheelchair, he's wheelchair bound.
And I guess I in real life he actually was wheelchair bound, which is an interesting touch. But we talked about Back to the Future earlier. Mac and Me has music composed by Alan Silvestri, who also did music for Back to the Future. Mac and Me is complete crap, but it's not even enjoyable crap.
I liked it as a kid. I don't know why.
Is that the movie is a commercial for Coca-Cola
and McDonald's,
the corporation, not the product.
There's lines of dialogues where it's like, "Hey, I know what you're thinking of. You want to get a Big Mac," and he's like, "How did you guess?" With like no setup of him eating a Big Mac in an earlier scene.
Yeah,
later party scene at a McDonald's with Ronald McDonald dancing around.
Yeah, with actual Ronald McDonald, I want to be clear. Ronald McDonald isn't a real person. That's an actor in makeup. Every now and then they have to kill him and replace him with someone else.
Here's a hint, kids. Aunt Jemima ain't real either, and neither is Betty Crocker. It's the same sort of thing.
That sounds like a Harlan Ellison line. Aunt Jemima ain't real.
But I've been enjoying her syrup for years.
Ba boom.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah, they weren't any excuse to mention McDonald's or Coke. And you want to know how fucked up reprehensible this is, Coke
Coca-Cola,
is the alien's
cocaine.
Primary source of nutrition. It's what heals them and brings them back to life. Fucking Coca-Cola.
Was E.T. really better with, like, motherfucking Reese's Pieces? I mean, those are candy.
No, he liked Reese's Pieces. I like Reese's Pieces,
Reese's
too.
Reese's Pieces didn't bring E.T. back to life, I guess.
Well, no. The Reese's Pieces are just like a symbolic gift between Elliot and E.T. It serves its purpose, and then it's removed from the film.
Thank you.
Film is nonstop. You will buy Coke. You will eat Big Macs. You will enjoy this film.
Didn't they put his face on cans at some point or something? I remember there being an alien.
I don't think Mac and Me was ever that also popular, but I don't know.
But yeah, after a whole bunch of running around and wasting of our time, I guess everything gets resolved. I don't even remember how this film fucking ends.
I didn't fucking finish
don't
it.
They,
so you can...
No, because don't they? It's just like that episode of South Park. They give them clothes and they become citizens of the United States.
Yeah, it's something like that. Yeah, like it ends like with the aliens wearing clothes. And they look even worse with clothes. They look like ventriloquist dummies that have been run through a garbage compactor. And they're driving on the road. And Mac blows a bubble. And on the bubble, we'll be back. No, you fucking won't.
If we have anything to do with it, which we do.
And, you know, the only good thing to come out of this movie is the a running gag on Conan O'Brien where they would just, like, at random show a clip of the kid in the wheelchair going off a cliff while Mac watches.
And it's a big cliff. The impact, I think, would kill the kid and maybe break his already gimped legs. Nope. He swims around, and he's kind of fine. Ugh.
Wow.
Don't watch this movie. Everything about it is wrong.
No. So we've discussed a lot of movies on this episode of the Sequel Cast, and the whole theme here was, in case you missed it, which I don't blame you if you did, is it's movies that sort of promise sequels, but they never actually made sequels.
If we've missed any... contact
you know,
us.
There was one I was going to mention, but then I found out there was a direct-to-video sequel.
What was that?
Oh, Warriors of Virtue, which was clearly meant to start a toyetic franchise.
Was that with the kangaroo robot?
Kung
things?
Fu kangaroos, yeah. And then, of course, 7 or more years later, oddly enough, there was a sequel.
Was it a cartoon sequel, or...?
I don't know. I can't... I actually never saw it. I stumbled upon it while doing research for this podcast.
All right, how do we end this?
So until next time, this is Uncle Milkshake.
Thrasher.
And Jersey Jason.
Saying...
As Mr. Pink.
Saying, sequel, cast.
I hope they make a sequel to Sequel Cast.
There you go. Sequel Cast will return next episode.